In Western culture, we use this poetic phrase, Mother Earth. But in ancient India, they use the word prithvi or bhumi. And this conveys the idea of a mother, and the mother is in the position where she's meant to be served by her children.
We're all children of planet Earth, of course. But Sita, one of the main characters of Ramayana, is described literally as the daughter of Earth. She makes her first appearance when she's ploughed out of a furrow. But what does the story teach us about how we should treat Mother Earth? Kripamoya Das is senior priest at the Hare Krishna temple in Watford.
You serve her by preserving her, not consuming more than you need, and to live in such a way that you tread softly.
As one of the five original elements, Mother Earth has been here from the off. Though each human trace is erased from the universe and the earth, though each corpse be million years under, Mother Earth will always bear an impress of every foot that trod anxiously and ecstatically through good and evil upon her.
One great verse says that Mother Earth can tolerate almost anything from her children, but the one thing she cannot tolerate is dishonesty. Dishonesty in our dealings with each other pollutes the atmosphere, and it will have a pernicious effect on human civilization.
My name is Satish Sharma. I'm the General Secretary of the National Council of Hindu Temples. At the moment, we are in a great deal of disharmony and discord with the way in which the planet works, and it's becoming unavoidable to notice. East Berkshire at the moment is really struggling underwater.
In a way, we act a bit like the race of demon-like human beings called Rakshasas in the Ramayana.
The race of Rakshas, the demons, is also called the race of Asuras. And the word sur means harmony, and asur means without harmony. And it's only human beings who can actually act without harmony. We have the capacity to look at this whole system from outside, whereas every other creature follows its instincts, and it naturally works in harmony with the whole. So I think there's a huge message in there that if we seek to find harmony within ourselves, then we naturally work in a manner which is harmonious with the planet.
But how do we find this harmony? Is it by retreating to nature that we can discover this inner peace?
To have a good planet, you need to respect it the way you respect each other. And I think at that time, they didn't have any global warming, and so it was very pure and natural. And there were quite a lot of animals then, and there were lots of forests and trees.
When Rama leaves for the forest with Sita and Lakshman, he has to give up all treasures of being king, all the pleasures, to go to the forest and just lead a simple life. And I think that proves to us that we don't need the latest gadgets, we don't need the latest clothes, because we can lead a happy life without all of it.
Jambi Katecha and Shivali Vaya from the Avanti House Free School in Stanmore. Jatinder Varma is artistic director and founder of Tara Arts.
The notion of the forest, of a non-human space, goes right through the Ramayana, but also throughout Indian literature. Rather like in King Lear, it's in the heath that Lear ultimately finds out what he really is. And so the heath is a character. And in the same way, Chitrakoot, the forest where Rama is exiled, becomes a character. And it's in the forest where he no longer has his guards with him, he no longer has his servants, he's stripped of his finery. He has to discover who he really is. And it seems to me that that's another kind of aspect within the Ramayana, how humanity, having achieved a lot, actually achieves even more once it gives up something.
Rama and Sita are dressed in tree bark, and they have plenty of food and fruits and, you know, fishes. Yet there is danger there, isn't there? This is a place of many transformations where experience is yet to be gained.
But those dangers are designed to actually confront yourself and therefore find out more about yourself. I mean, you know, one classic example is, of course, the deer within the forest, and it looks magnificent. And yet what does it do? It actually acts as this agency of desire.
A deer. It's a deer. It's all lit up.
Are you hallucinating?
There. It skipped behind the parrot tree. It's glowing.
It's the leaves. No, she's right. See? All sorts of colours bouncing off it.
Can we catch it?
Don't move yet. It's skipping and jumping too quickly.
Sita sees the deer and is completely overtaken by it. And she absolutely wants it. And it could be argued that actually it is that aspect, desire for an object, whether as a companion or as an object of hers, that actually leads to the next stage of the tragedy, being separated. And for Rama then to discover in himself, well, what does it take then for me to reunite with my soul buddy, if you like?
The Ramayana is teeming with animals. And unlike the stories of the Greeks and Romans, the animals in the Ramayana seem to have a more symbiotic relationship with human beings. Bhuta Bhavana Das is a practitioner of the Hare Krishna tradition.
One of my very dear inspirations used to live in a very kind of natural setting. And when he first went into that setting, he was told that there's one trick that you should know about how to live in this kind of jungle or forest. When there are wild animals, if you feel that you're better than them, or if you fear them, they'll attack you. But if you actually don't feel that you're superior, if you see a kindredship with them, then you can actually live in that environment in great peace. So I think that when we dominate and exploit nature, then nature itself becomes hostile to humanity. Lord Ram's example teaches us that there's a need for us to recognize the power of nature and our role as caretakers of nature.
Certainly something that struck me very much as a child was the involvement of every single creature on earth. There were these birds and there were these monkeys and there were these stones, all of which had some moral value in the universe.
When they were making the bridge to get Sita from Ravan, because they needed to make a bridge big enough to carry a lot of people, they got big rocks and then they wrote Ram on them and they would just float. And I think that shows how powerful Ram is and how devoted these monkeys were.
I mean, there's one wonderful line, Charo Yug Partap Tumara, your grace is across the four ages. Mm. And that is Hanuman, the monkey king. You think, wow, I mean, a monkey, an animal, that which we in our normal lives consider to be lower than us, grace all the ages of humankind. And that's something which I think is one of the other great virtues of the Ramayana, that it gives them agency. It gives them this kind of extraordinary power.
Hanuman leads his monkeys, thousands of them, to the narrowest point, the causeway between Lanka and India. They form a chain linked by their tails. From dawn to dusk, they pass rocks along the chain. As the bridge rises, so do they. They jump on each other's shoulders, and still the chain goes on. It's magnificent. The pathway of boulders takes shape, skimming the surface of the waves.
But there was this little squirrel, and he or she was just carrying little rocks. And then Hanuman said, there's no need to do this because you're so small you can't do anything. And this squirrel was very committed and carried on. And the squirrel actually made a big impact on the whole bridge. And eventually they got through. And I think that just shows that every little helps, no matter how big or small you are.
It's Hanuman who leads the animals in the victorious battle against the demon Ravana. And he's regarded as a hero to many people around the world today, as the Hindu theologian Akhandani Das explains.
Of all the characters in the Ramayana, it's Hanuman who always acts with the very clear knowledge at the front of his mind that Ram is his lord. And I think it's because of that that he has found a particular spot in the hearts of all Hindus.
He's such a big role model to me, and without Hanuman, Ram's brother Lakshman, he wouldn't be alive during the battle.
When Lakshmana is wounded, Hanuman is told, oh, go and get this particular plant.
The Sanjeevani, yeah?
Yeah, the Sanjeevani plant.
He is told that he'll see the Sanjeevani glowing, but the sages don't want someone coming there picking their important herb, so they make all the flowers luminous.
And poor old Hanuman, from his sort of slight dimness, lifts up an entire mountain and brings it over. I mean, that's what I remember as a child made me just absolutely in love with Hanuman. You know, wow, that's the way to do it. You know, forget about trying to search for this particular kind of herb. Take the whole mountain.
What's the reminder trying to tell us that? Because that is one of those sort of great scenes taught at primary schools up and down Britain.
He's just demonstrating that when there is faith in God, you can do absolutely anything.
And also, when you're faced with the extreme moment, and I'm here reminded of when my mother was very seriously ill, like Hanuman, you know, you get the whole mountain of drugs if one drug is not going to be enough. Get it. Do whatever it takes in order to ensure that your loved one continues on.
Ganja is the greatest necklace, its riches draping around the world. Just look at her streams flowing down from the Himalayas and kissing all they touch. For blooming essence of rare herbs and wild fruits, Ganja feeding all that beards and garbs the earth. Ganja nursing the parched throat, dying for a sip. The souls of each being are cleansed for salvation once their ashes replenish the roots by flowing through water. Ganja rushing down, cleansing and bearing, so each stitched touch becomes in essence holy. Herein is life, is death, is life and death and life again.
I'm ready to leave, but not with you.
Where will you go?
Back to my mother.
I don't understand.
I don't want you anymore, Rama.
Sita, please.
Mother Earth, if I've been true to my husband and children, take me back so I can lie in your arms.
Sita, forgive me!
Initially, when I first came across that story, I thought, well, gosh, this is an extraordinary rejection. Here is the most amazingly powerful statement by a woman to say, well, fine, you've kind of tested my loyalty once. You tested it again. Now I return your children to you, but I will not go back to you. I will return to the earth. I was always, as a result of that story, absolutely terrified of earthquakes. However, I found this sort of amazing set of miniatures, and there's one of Sita descending into the earth. And what I found astonishing about that painting was the way people were looking on. So you've got Rama, you've got Hanuman, animals, you've got the boar over there, and you've got all these sort of women.
And the gods in the
heavens looking on at her and accepting of this fissure in the earth and her returning to where she started from. There isn't a sense of gloom about it.
No, I agree. It feels quite devotional in a way. I mean, the idea of Sita feels very cyclical. She returns to Mother Earth.
Precisely.
And this kind of incarnatory kind of quality about Sita.
At the end of the day, what endures is the earth, the Gaia principle. And there is, for me, no more wonderful image than that.